Welcome back to the Groups Matter Podcast Show, episode 39. 39. I'm Brian Daniel with co-host and small group specialist, expert, extraordinary Chris Surratt.
What is happening?
Well, February is coming to a close, I think. And just like we talked about last time, I think winter is, I think it's out. I mean, we live in the South. I mean, once you get to March, it may snow, but it's done. And I'm good with that.
All I think about from the end of February is Easter. Easter's coming. You know, beside just, you know, the spiritual sense, it means like flowers and warmth.
Of course it does. Episode 39, we've got later on Spence Shelton, which you and I both know Spence and have known him for several years. I knew him as small groups guy. He had the blog for so long, and he was at Summit.
Yep.
In Raleigh with another friend, J.D. Greer.
Yep.
J.D. is an author of ours and has written, we have several studies with J.D. And now Spence has gone off to be, he has made the transition from groups guy to discipleship pastor to senior pastor.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to Spence, just kind of making that transition from a discipleship guy, small groups guy, which he was. He was kind of the man out there, and now he's a lead pastor. And what does that look like, that transition? And then he has, I guess, he probably has some great insight on how do you communicate to your discipleship pastor, and how should the discipleship pastor communicate to the senior pastor? Because I think that's a gap that a lot of us have, and so I want to hear his wisdom on that.
And pursuant to that conversation, the post that we've identified this week is from ericgeiger.com, 6 Types of Dangerous Charisma. Now, in the era that we're in, with social media being what it is and what it has become, I think charisma is something that, and this is a timely post, but the idea or how notions of leadership juxtapose with notions of followership, and I would even contend influence, is really interesting. So what contributes to followership? We both know people with hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers. What does that really mean? And what's the role of charisma? Maybe what are the dangers of charisma in the world that we live in? So I thought this post was really interesting. I thought it would be good to take a look at that, because it might even ask Spence what he thinks about it. As he's moved into that senior pastor role, how has he seen maybe differences in that respect?
Yeah, I love this article, and sometimes you can buy those followers. I don't know if you're aware of that, but especially when we think about like small group leadership, and we've talked before, a lot of pastors are afraid of small groups because of where those might go, and if they go south, and if they have the wrong kind of leadership. And sometimes when I've seen small groups or even churches go south, it's because they have a very charismatic, as we think of charisma, leader, but they lack some of these things that Eric talks about in this article, and either the group just implodes or it goes the wrong direction and follows the wrong type of leader.
Now, Eric is the vice president of Lifeway Resources Division. He is he'll be on the show episode 40, our next episode. But I think he's actually one of the most effective communicators I've heard. I really, really, really like Eric a lot. And so this is not really saying charisma is a bad thing. He's just identifying the six potential dangers. And I don't think this is by any means a complete list, but it's six of these, you know, maybe the downsides or the dark side of charisma.
I think we've probably seen leaders with all of these. We may see some leaders in, you know, politics or even in our churches that have some of these, that lack some of these things that he's talking about with charisma.
So again, ericgeiger.com. First one is charisma without character. He says, when the gifting of a leader outpaces the character of a leader, implosion is inevitable. If integrity beneath the charisma is lacking, the leadership is typically all about the leader and not about the health of the organization. Second one, charisma without consistency. Chris, what do you think about that?
Yeah, he talks about it. Charisma in the same direction over and over again can make a significant impact. However, passionate leadership that continually changes directions is exhausting. And I think you see this a lot, especially in the church world. A lot of leaders, when they read a new book, suddenly that's the direction the church is going. Or they go to a new conference, or they listen to a podcast, or whatever. Ooh. And it just gets dizzying trying to follow where that leader is going, because they're always jumping onto the next bandwagon. And that people get tired and they jump off.
I think what you see in that respect is this idea of charisma is usually associated with energy. And these types of leaders usually have a high energy, so they're always thinking and always looking for new ideas. And so that's one of the one of the dangers. Third one's interesting. This is charisma without preparation. I think what happens here, and really the sin of pride, if you will, comes into play, because that's when I might start depending on my charisma as opposed to other healthier things, such as preparation. Specifically, Eric says, leaders who possess charisma are able to woo others and wow a room. But in time, charisma without preparation is uncovered and the leader's credibility is harmed. And I think when we have Eric on the show, he's going to talk a little bit about just this idea of credibility.
Yeah, it comes to a point, you know, some leaders can walk in and just, you know, read the room and off the top of their head, but that only goes so deep and it only goes beyond that initial vision meeting. Then when it's time to put that vision into action, there's nothing there.
And it can give the appearance of success as well.
Yep, yep. Next one is charisma without wisdom. It says a gifted leader will lead people in a direction, but without wisdom, the direction may be the wrong one. And that goes to, you know, it's if it's not based in scripture, if it's not based in the word, and they're not getting godly wisdom from people around them, they're going to go in their own direction. And that's the wrong way to go.
The fifth one, charisma without clarity, is akin to charisma without preparation. But this is very similar in that I think no effort is given to whatever we're talking about, whether it is a presentation, whether it's leadership, whether it's vision casting, an important message. When I count on my charisma as opposed to the things that give it weightiness, and those things tend to be wisdom, clarity, and the preparation that goes into both of those things, then I think what Eric is saying here is that's one of the dangers. And I think preparation and wisdom probably lead to greater clarity, but it's certainly something that needs to be taken into account.
Yeah, have to have that why, which is what he talks about in there. Why are we doing this? Which kind of leads in the last one too, I think, which is charisma without conviction. He says a passionate leader without conviction is always looking for something new to be passionate about. So they're looking for something they haven't found yet, but they're trying to get people to follow them as they go. And, you know, that's just a dangerous way to do it. And you're not going to have followers for very long if it doesn't go deeper than just your words.
That's Eric Geiger, ericgeiger.com. And that's E-R-I-C-G-E-I-G-E-R. You might want to check out Designed to Lead. We'll talk about this in the next episode, but that book was written by Eric, co-written by Eric with Kevin Peck. So Eric's blog is really nice, very succinct, usually short. It's not long-winded. It's usually bulleted. It's something that I think is worth looking at every single day.
That's the way I like to read, so it makes it easy. All right, today's guest is Spence Shelton, and Spence is a great friend, but he's also the lead pastor of Mercy Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. It launched in September of 2015 with the vision of seeing a gospel awakening move through the people of Charlotte that is carried to the ends of the earth. He holds an MDiv from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's authored a lot of small group curriculum and is a sought-after speaker in the area of community and discipleship. And he and his wife, Courtney, have four children and is just an all-around great guy. And I think we have him on the phone, so let's talk to Spence. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Spence. I hope that you are doing well.
Yeah, man, doing well. Glad to be with you guys today.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking some time to join us. And we talked a little bit earlier about you and the fact that when Brian and I both got to know you, you were kind of the small groups guy. I mean, you had a blog and you wrote about it a lot, and you were the discipleship guy at the Summit Church. And I'm really curious about kind of that journey from being on staff and being a discipleship pastor to launching a church and being the senior guy. What was that journey like, and has it been what you thought it would be, or different?
Yeah, man, that's a good question. Truthfully, it has been a really great transition for me. And honestly, there's not many guys that I've been able to interact with who have made that shift from the discipleship, the group space, into the lead pastor space. There were very few people that I could go and sit down and talk with and say, how did your transition go? Which I hope we see a lot more of, because, you know, my heartbeat is still that, you know, discipleship is the heartbeat of the church. Anyway, but it went really, really well for me. As great as the transitions I could imagine in terms of the role change. And man, I think the reason for that, we can get into if you guys want to a little bit more, like why I made that step out. But the transition itself is something important for other guys if they're thinking about it. And I really hope some are thinking about taking that step to infuse what learned and become passionate about in the group space into the lead pastor role. One thing I learned is that when you don't rush your development and when you lean on the counsel of elders and those who are kind of in a spiritual authority over you, it ends up being not a big surprise. There's a good chance you'll move into something that's a good fit for you. So that's kind of what happened for me. I thought about, you know, I was always one who was thinking about as I went through seminary training and everything else, maybe I'll be one who's a lead pastor regularly preaching someday, but wasn't really sure. And it was several years. I mean, I spent 10 years in the group's space in a church where I really respected and valued the men who were overseeing me, the men that I reported to, my pastors and everybody else, and just got to learn from them. And at the same time, I asked on a regular basis, you know, is this the right fit for me? Is there something else you guys want me to be doing, et cetera, just as we grew as a church? I loved my time in groups. I did not transition out because I lost my affection for a discipleship or groups by any means. I love it. I feel like I just get to be even more effective in leading that from this role that I'm in now. But I think the big thing was, as I grew as a pastor, the guys around me started to say, man, we see that the giftings and the way God has wired you suits you better in a lead pastor role than in the role that you've been in. And at the same time, I was feeling a little bit more on an increased level, a sense of, man, I really want to teach God's word. I want to preach more than I'm able to do in the chair that I'm in. And so we prayed and talked about that for 2 years. It was not a short thing. Part of it is probably I'm just pretty stubborn. I enjoyed the space that I was in and didn't want to change, even though God was clearly starting to direct me towards a lead pastor role. And I had a great church, man, especially my lead pastor, J.D. Greer from over at the Summit, man. He's a good friend who really walked with me through all of that to try and figure out, is this the right fit for me? Went through a lot of assessments and everything else. And so when all that came back pretty clear that this would be a good fit, you can know nothing for certain. But again, when those around you are all kind of affirming the same thing, it's not that big of a surprise that moving then into that role, while there's still plenty of stuff that I like, you know, don't know, and all these kind of speed bumps I'm learning, by all means, I still have the learning curve like every other guy in a new position. It's been a pretty great transition, and I still have a lot of good mentors that I can call and say, hey, how do I do this? So for me, I really enjoyed it, and I hope that some other guys that will, many other guys will take that step as well. I feel like I'm now slipping into recruiting mode or something, but I want to see guys take that step as well.
Spence, this is Brian again. Thanks for being on the Groups Matter show. Just real quickly, so how many people have you run into that have made this transition?
Let me just say real quick how much I appreciate, I didn't say this, but how much I appreciate what you guys are doing, being able to continue to resource and help guys that are in the group space. You guys, the two of you, were good influences on me as I was trying to figure my way out, just starting out in groups. And I know many other guys are in that same boat. And so I'm very grateful for the resource you're providing for them. I met one guy that I know of who made that transition from, and it's not like I know everybody. So, you know, by no means do I like have this great network and one guy out of it. But out of all the guys I know and interacted with in the group space, two guys who made that transition from discipleship pastor to lead pastor.
Just curious, because I bet one of those guys is someone we have in common. All right, so my question is, what's the one thing every senior pastor should know about their small group discipleship pastor now that you're in this role?
One thing. Gosh, guys. All right.
Okay, two.
Here we go. Well, let me just, how about this? To the senior pastors, I'm going to say this like I'm talking directly to a senior pastor. Without your support, your group's guy shouldn't even be on staff. They're an empty chair unless you champion them. I one of the things about being in the groups here as long as I was, and having the privilege to kind of train and consult with guys all around the country or churches around the country, I just heard too many stories. Here's the way it went. Discipleship guys, groups guys call me, come to me saying, listen, man, our lead pastor is not really that into this, but I'm going to give it a try because I think it's something our church needs. And I felt so bad for this guy. So in some ways, like he's just a hamster running in his wheel, kind of wasting his time. My lead pastor, when I was in the groups role, was so good at this idea of championing the guys that were leading ministries. At every turn, he sought to prop up the pastors underneath him on the, so to speak, org chart, because he knew that our success was his success, and likewise, our failure would be his failure. And so it was a big deal for him to kind of ensure that we were championed and that we were unified in where we were going. Now, sometimes we sat down and we may have had different visions. That was always internally. When we worked it out, we got on the same page and moved forward together with the way that we shepherded and led our church. And that allowed me to thrive, right? So that's the biggest thing I can say to senior pastor is, if you don't trust the guy in that chair to run discipleship for you, to run groups for you, and you're not in agreement on what it is that's going to be the big win out of groups, then you need to either let him go, stop wasting his time, or you need to spend some time and get on the same page.
A couple of episodes ago, we talked about the importance or the significance of groups ministry in church culture. So that alone would support what you're saying. And how,
yeah, man.
It's just such an indicator, but also such a tool in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Conversely, what is the one thing that every small group discipleship pastor should know about their senior pastor? Now that you're in this role, you can say, "Oh, guys, this is something. This is something that maybe you need to know that you're not thinking about right now."
And this one is really. Man, I'm really feeling this one because when we planted, so I stepped into a role of a church planter. So we planted the church, and you do have to wear a lot of hats when you do that. And I kind of just assumed that I could wear the groups guy hat because after all, I've been doing it for 10 years. And apparently I thought I was Superman or whatever. But what I realized is that was more weight than I could carry just in my, one man can carry. And what I needed was a guy, and what every discipleship guy needs to know is that their lead guy needs them to beat the drum of groups constantly. You got to be ready with success stories in your pocket of, hey, man, here's what God's doing in our church. Look at this. He needs you to take initiative, and just like you need to be taking the world for the gospel. Do not, in one sense, do not wait on your lead pastor. Get an agreement like we talked about just a minute ago about what the goal is, but then get after it. Your lead pastor needs you to believe that there is no more important ministry in the church than yours. And at the very same time, he needs you to put the team before yourself. Does that make sense? Like, he needs you to think that your ministry, of course, is the most important one. But then at the end of the day, he needs you to put the team before yourself, which means a way we say it around here is you got to assume the best, right? So to the discipleship guys, assume the best in your lead pastor. If he makes a call in your ministries that benefits another ministry over yours, a budget call or a calendar call, those are the two big ones often, assume the best. A couple of principles that I learned, again, that I employ here at Mercy Church that I learned from my days at Summit. When you have a conflict with another team member, any team member, you got to assume the best. And that means you got to assume that person is smart, that they have your best interest in mind until it is proven otherwise. Those simple things, assume that person's smart and assume they have good intentions, right? They got your best intentions, unless somehow that gets proven otherwise, will go a long way to playing as a team, which is, gosh, it's just so big, especially if you're on a, as any church size and any church, any size staff. But I feel it, especially on our small staff that we have as a church plant, being able to assume the best in one another and work together as a team, while at the same time, my groups guy has got to be the one. He's got to be beating the drum for groups. I include him on our every week we do a sermon planning meeting where I read out my sermon, where we're going in the sermon, and it's the groups guy's job to say, hey, man, here's a great spot in the sermon where I think you could talk about this that is going on in this particular community group. Let's know the story. I need that. I need a guy who's waving. That used to be what I did. And now I just can't know all those things. I can't be in every in conversations with every leader. And I need a guy who's going to be waving that flag. And that's so to all the discipleship guys out there, get after it, right? Go hard after it and assume the best in your lead pastor and be right there beating the drum saying, hey, man, this is what's going on in our groups. I promise you it is not annoying to hear stories of what God is doing. That's never, there's no like, oh, that's too many stories of God's work. Never. There's no quota.
That is so good, Spence. And, you know, what you said is so true that if you're a staff member on a church, you do not have all the information that your senior pastor has. I mean, you are That's not right. seeing the whole picture. You're not getting all of the emails. You're not having those meetings. And so many times, and I've kind of sat on both sides of this, but we see just our little piece and we don't understand how that fits into the whole picture. And we make decisions and make remarks that damage, you know, what the possibility of our ministry is because of that. So I think that's so good. I have a follow-up question for you. When it comes to time with your senior pastor, how often do you think that the groups person should be spending with that senior pastor? And especially, I'm curious because you come from a large church background and there's so many things that pull at a pastor. And I talked to a lot of guys and they're like, man, I'm lucky to get a meeting once a month. I talked to one guy who had been at a large church and he had never had a face-to-face meeting with his senior pastor. And I just thought that was crazy. But how often do you think that the senior pastor and the discipleship, you know, guy or groups guy should be getting together?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a little bit practical and logistical, and so I want to be careful because obviously guys listening are a bunch of different. There are people just in bunch of different stages in terms of staff size, but in general, whoever is responsible. So, you know, whoever's responsible for the implementation of the discipleship strategy, like leading that, the one beating the drum, the one that everybody on staff knows is the champion for discipleship in the church and the champion for, we're talking, I think, primarily adult discipleship, so community groups, whatever you call them, whoever's the one beating the drum, man, should be able to have pretty easy, I would say, a decent relationship with the lead pastor. Because otherwise, you know, my fear as the, if I'm in the lead pastor chair and I don't even have a good working relationship with the guy that's implementing the vision that we're setting out, how do I know that this is actually happening? I mean, I can, you know, preach a good game, but that's all it is, unless I know and am supporting the guy who is helping to make this thing a reality. Now, what does that mean in terms of week to week or month to month? I certainly would say it should be more than once a month. It might be good for some to have a meeting on the calendar. You know, I mean, I'm here in a church plant situation and I sit down with our discipleship guy once a week and he's, you know, 20-hour part-time a week guy because we're a church plant. That's where we are right now, you know. Mm-hmm. But that just is some time for us to sit down and talk through. I'm doing a lot of training him in the group space, trying to leverage the experience I've had to help him out. But that's just where we are right now. You know, when I was in a much larger church staff setting, I had a good relationship that had been built over a significant amount of time that meant I didn't need to necessarily have a regular meeting on the calendar because it was much more of a relational as needed conversation. And that was both ways. It was never a surprise when my lead pastor, you know, we were a big church with, you know, over 100, a couple hundred staff people. And it was no surprise for my lead pastor to come walking into my office and say, hey, man, I've been thinking about this. I think it's just as much, if not more, an admonishment to lead pastors to say, you take the initiative to build a relationship with your groups guy. Because if the groups guy is smart, he'll drop what he's doing to sit down and talk with and build that relationship with you if you'll make the time. And that relationship will serve you so well to feel like you know one another, you're kind of thinking on the same wavelength. That's where that can go. And I just feel like that's probably more on the lead pastor than even on the groups guy. And that goes all the way back to senior pastor. You got to champion your groups guy.
That's good. I mean, when I could get time with my senior pastor, whether it was just casual or, you know, he dropped in my office, I would take that. That's gold for you, guys who are sitting out there. I mean, if you get that moment, don't waste it. Don't, you know, use it, spend time with your pastor. One last question for you, Spence. A lot of churches, I think, have a hard time of kind of creating a spiritual path for people to follow. And, you know, it's just kind of do this or do that, or, you know, we need a path. People need a path. So how do you create a unified spiritual path for the people in your church? And for you, where do small groups live on that path?
Yeah, that's a, that's like a whole seminary degree question, right? Okay. So I'm going to give a little bit of some lessons learned and say that I am very much still in the, and will probably always be in learning mode in some sense in this regard. But one thing, just a couple of things that I have learned that I just sort of live and die by here. And the first one is clarifying the when, right? Like, so when we talk about a spiritual path, where in the world does that thing end? Like, what is the goal? And that the simple question is, what is a disciple? Because I don't think you can get away from Matthew 22 and Matthew 28, which are pretty clear on what a disciple is: love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. And then going beyond that to what's our commission as the church, and that's to make disciples of all nations, right? So for us, our mission statement is make disciples who love God, love each other, and love our world. That's some just language that we hang on the Great Commandment and the Great Commission. And that's our kind of our win is if that's happening. So then my first thing to say to anyone when they're looking to create a spiritual pathway is, where is it going to go? Like, does your staff team agree on what the win is? You know, like what's our, and that gets into, of course, what the mission and vision of who we are as a church. The one sort of tagline or the plumb line, whatever, however you want to call it, that we say a lot around here is that clarity in expectation creates confidence in execution. So clarity in whatever you expect someone to do and being clear and communicating that to them will create confidence and then being able to carry that out. And that's true whether you are training a parking team member or you are training a community group leader or a community group pastor or whatever else. Clarity in what you expect out of them is going to give them so much confidence in where they're going. And it's true for you as a church. You know, where do you want to go? Know what you're aiming at and get clear on that. A great resource, I don't know if it's okay to recommend a resource in this setting, but Will Mancini wrote a book called Church Unique, and it provides in there, I think it's a great resource because an exercise to work through that he calls a vision frame. And it's an awesome exercise to help you go from what do we believe a disciple is all the way to what's our mission and vision and how are we going to carry it out. So that might be a good just like example resource. As far as where groups land in that pathway, for me, I just kind of we try and keep things pretty simple. And for us, discipleship is going to take place in relationships. That seems like the overwhelming testimony of Scripture, all the way from Deuteronomy 6 to all of your epistles are going to talk about discipleship. I mean, even Christ himself is going to walk alongside of his disciples, and that's how they're going to grow into being his followers, right? So for us, if discipleship happens in relationship, groups are not a program of the church, right? Groups are an expression of the church. Please don't tease out my theology too much on that one. I'm not trying to make a deep theological statement. I'm trying to say that groups can't just be a program that is optional for you to attend and maybe participate in. It's got to be the lifeline by which people build community and are challenged as they grow in their discipleship.
Well, Spence, it's been great. You and I have worked together on several projects, and it's always been enjoyable. We are really excited for you. And the fact that you have this group experience and discipleship experience as a part of your formation in the position you are there at the church is just great. And you're right, it's a good testimony. So that's going to wrap it up for us. Appreciate you being with us. And hey,
thanks
how about
so
we
much,
do it again?
Man.
You want to do it again?
Let's yeah, man, I'd love it, man. Yeah, give me a holler, whatever, man.
Maybe, those of you listeners may not know, but I'm a Kentucky alum and fan, and Spence is a North Carolina alum which we don't get that very often, that you actually have not just fan bases but actual alums. So, you know, it's been good, right? It's been healthy. I think we've both grown throughout that experience, right? I know I have, and I appreciate.
Yeah, it's really
appreciate your discipleship in that regard. So it's been nice.
That's good, man.
It's been nice.
Good. Let's talk around the end of March. It'll be a good time.
Hey, are you going to be at the SBC this year?
Yeah, man, I'll be there.
Okay, that'll be great. All right, thanks,
all right,
Spence.
Buddy. Thank you, guys.
Man, I love that guy.
Spence is great. And when I first started kind of doing small groups on a regular basis with my previous church, Spence was one of the first guys I started reading and met him at a conference. And, man, what an encourager. And knows his stuff.
He and Ben Reed used to do a lot of stuff together, and they would be in and out of Nashville. So I got to spend not a little time just talking with those guys. You know, Ben was here at – he was in Clarksville for a little while in Tennessee, mm-hmm. and then at Long Hollow. And Spence was at Summit. But Spence has actually written probably as many as 4 small group studies for us.
Wow.
So not only was he a discipleship pastor, but actually a really good writer. So he understands the dynamic of how groups work and the personal aspect in the group space probably as good as any senior pastor will because of his experience. So you can follow Spence on Twitter. At Spence Shelton, and let me spell that for you. That's SpenceShelton. He's a good guy to follow and knows his stuff, and it's good to have him on board or have him on the show. So, Chris, you want to tell people about smallgroup.com real quick before we get out of here?
Smallgroup.com is a sponsor for this show, and you can check it out for 2 weeks absolutely for free, no obligation. Just go to smallgroup.com, log in with an email, pick a password, and download as many studies as you want and just check it out and customize and all of that stuff. So see what you think. Smallgroup.com.
And while I would encourage you to buy the print version of studies, because that's what I do, if sermon-based is your thing, for more and more people it is, and for a lot of our guests, Chris, they espouse the merit of a sermon-based study. You cannot get any better than smallgroup.com. This is Brian Daniel for Chris Surratt. This is signing off episode 39. Hope to see you next time for episode 40.